It is a pleasure to be here, and I'll try to give today a rather simple explanation as to why the data in cosmology affect our views on what fundamental physics is. And so I'll just give you lots of information on recent data. And it is a pleasure to be here because this first set of crucial new data was actually coming from CITA, the Institute of Cosmology, which is Near Fields Institute. And the way things are now, many mathematicians are interested in understanding how to work out the situation starting with fundamental string theory and how to bring this towards realistic cosmology. So it is exactly between the mathematical structure of theories and observational data. And so I'll try to explain this starting today, and the second two lectures will be much more technical. Today will be mostly exposition of recent data. Oops, sorry. So the first lecture is supposed to be pedagogical, and I will just cover something which people call today standard cosmological model. It is not as well established, of course, as standard particle model, but it is looking like we do have a concordance model. And so the common features and differences between early universe inflation and late time acceleration, and I'll tell you a little bit more about it. So I'll explain this, and mostly I'll try to explain why people who are interested in either fundamental physics or issues in mathematics related to theoretical physics may at least pay attention to this new data. And so I'll try to explain things about early universe inflation and what we see now as current acceleration. And so because this is known mostly from 98, so there is 7 years that we know that there are new data which actually changing strongly our ideas about what nature is telling us. So there was a lot of attempts to start with string theory and try to explain the data. And this is very far from having something done, but at least I'll try to explain you the attempts which are here. So in this lecture, I'll talk about this cosmological concordance model and problems which M string theory has in explaining the observations. Then the new slogan which seemed to exist in string theory goes with the name flux compactification and stabilization of moduli. And what we have for a few years now is something like an attempt to produce this metastable de Sitter space in string theory, and this is kind of a space which the cosmological data suggest we should be able to produce. I'll mention something about particular class of de Sitter supergravities, which are, go by the name ghost-free de Sitter supergravities, because they are consistent reductions of string and M theory. And amazingly, they always produce something which we call collapsing universe, and you will see why. Then I'll talk about landscape of string theory. This is a new concept, and many people are polarized about this concept. Some people like it, some people hate it. It comes with statistics of flux vacua, and it is designed to address the issue of CC problem. Some of you probably know CC problem is cosmological constant problem. This is an extremely difficult problem, but it seems it is there and has to be resolved. And then I'll talk a little bit about inflation in string theory, cosmic strings, and scale of supersymmetry breaking. So the first thing which I would like to stress is that our universe is an ultimate test of fundamental physics. And high energy accelerators will probe the scale of energies way below grand unified scales, whereas cosmology and astrophysics are sources of data in the gravitational sector of fundamental physics. And this is the only reason why temporary theoretical physics has to take into account the data which comes from cosmology. So the data seem to support the concept of dark energy and inflation. And it is fair to say that we really, because of this data, we don't know what fundamental physics is. Whatever was considered fundamental physics before 98, when the first supernova data suddenly throw us this positive cosmological constant, now is in the process, and I think most people agree that before this cosmological constant problem is resolved, we don't know where is the starting point. So I will give a reference to Ed Witten, who made the following remark, that this is most embarrassing observation in physics, that is the only quick thing I can say about dark energy that is also true. And this was a few years ago, and I think it's still at the same level. So what is so embarrassing about it? There are two general problems. The first one, why is the cosmological constant so small? So in natural and the only existing Planck units, lambda is less than 10 to the minus 120. And of course, this is an extremely small number and extremely difficult to explain. So from 98, when this number came out, people were hoping that this is such a nuisance, it will go away. But it is not. And I'll try to show you that accumulating set of data really tells us this is this horrible number and this is this cosmological constant problem, because there are no easy way to explain it, but it is there. Now, another problem is why the cosmological constant or dark energy is of the same scale as matter. And so this is the famous coincidence problem, and it was addressed to some extent by anthropic principle, starting with Steve Weinberg in 87, but it is still a puzzle. The third problem. 2 years ago, it was not clear how one could possibly incorporate a positive cosmological constant in string theory, and this was the main reason of embarrassment for string theories, because the cosmological constant cosmological data suggests that lambda is positive. And this was simply not available in string theory. So there was a particular construction which goes by the name of Kachru, Linde, Trivedi, and myself, which at least tries to address the issue, how to get positive cosmological constant from string theory. So first of all, why should we at all try to explain it starting from string theory or M theory? Because it is believed that this theory is fundamental. There are arguments that the theory is the only known perturbative finite quantum gravity. It is the only model, fundamental model, where we believe we have some clues about what is beyond standard model in particle physics. It includes supersymmetry and supergravity. And because those are of maximal dimension, they're almost unique, and therefore everybody wants to keep them. And it is the best theory which we have now, of course, unless it will be ruled out by observations. And this we don't know yet. I will skip the rest. All right, so here is this LHC, a big accelerator at CERN, which will come out presumably, if we are lucky, in summer 2007. And this is Atlas Cavern, and this is CMS. CMS seems to be behind for half of a year, so Atlas will be the first to give us the data. Fabiola Giannotti, she's a spokesman for Atlas. And so she recently published the wonderful paper about what LHC will do. So the main goal is to get Higgs particle and to see if standard model of supersymmetry is there. And perhaps they will find split supersymmetry, which will be part of the landscape picture, which I'll explain to you later. So they already know that what LHC should watch is, in addition to usual supersymmetry, this new type of supersymmetry, which is called split supersymmetry. So the interesting feature of LHC is that If superpartners are at about 1.3 TeV, they should be discovered during the first month. And if they go up to 3 TeV, it will take a year, but the signal is expected to be much, much stronger than the background. So we will know about presence of supersymmetric particles fairly soon as the detectors will start working. So LHC will add many crucial pieces to our understanding of what fundamental physics is, and it is expected that it will give a huge impact on astroparticle physics and cosmology. And so what is expected that in 3 years, particle physics may enter the most glorious epoch of its history. So if supersymmetry is there, the significance of discovery of supersymmetry in nature is difficult to overestimate. It will manifest itself via existence of supersymmetric particles. But basically, it will be a discovery of fermionic dimensions of space-time. So it will be not just few more particles. It will be absolutely fundamental. So it will be the most fundamental discovery of physics after Einstein's relativity. What relativity did for us, Einstein explained to us that time and space are not independent. There is no absolute time. They actually transform together, which is Einstein's relativity. And therefore, instead of having just time and space, we have some four-dimensional space-time. If we have supersymmetry, and of course, Lorentz symmetry and general relativity have been confirmed and confirmed over the years. If supersymmetry will be discovered, this would mean that in addition to those four coordinates of space and time, we'll have some fermionic directions, and they all transform through each other. And instead of a space, we'll have superspace, and gravity will naturally be associated with supergravity and string theory. And so this is a step which everybody would like to see happening in their lifetime. So what is the relation between fundamental physics and observation in cosmology? So it is like this tree. When we look back in time here and we look at the sky, we can reconstruct what was happening long time before, like with this tree. So we are mapping the expansion history of the universe. And the data about the scale factors, the universe, they become more and more precise. This is the main feature of last 7-8 years. Now, this major discovery, which was first announced in 98, but more and more data confirm it, is a discovery of the fact that the universe now is accelerated. So not only is it expanding, but so after the early universe, when there was a period of big explosion, which where the universe was strongly accelerating, it entered the long stage of deceleration. And so the total age of the universe, which is about 14 billion years, after 10 to the minus 35 seconds of inflation and reheating, entered into the stage of deceleration. But over the last 5 billion years, approximately 5 or 7 billion years, the universe again started accelerating. This was rather unexpected, and this is one of the signatures of this cosmological constant problem. It was first discovered by observation of supernova. They were not as bright as expected. And so from 98, there was a long expectation that something must be wrong with supernova, because otherwise they completely change everything which we would like to see at the sky. However, later on, there are many other cosmological observations which include cosmic microwave background, and I'm sure you have seen this map of the sky. So now what we know, here is the theoretical part which predicts this yellow curve is associated with the theory of early universe inflation. And as you see, there are lots of data here. The first actually were coming from Boomerang and have been analyzed here at CETA. And again, there was a hope that perhaps something is not quite right. But after WMAP, so many new points were added. And of course, there are glitches in few places, and we still have to wait before we are sure that this is a standard model. But already now, it is quite impressive. Again, here is just to tell you that this is a theoretical curve for angular scale depending on various factors. And here is the prediction, the theoretical prediction of polarization. And you see all the experimental dots, and they seem to fit quite convincing. So this is something which I was accumulating with regard to different independent experiments before. I'm willing to accept that the fundamental theoretical physics requires perhaps a revision or at least attention to cosmological data. I wanted to make sure that those data are coming from completely independent sources. And this was indeed the case. So what you see here, this is a power spectra which could be measured in different ways. For example, one set of dots is coming with error bars is coming from cosmic microwave background. Then there is a completely independent set of observations which comes from cluster abundance. Then more recently there was Sloan Digital Sky Survey, gravitational lensing and something else. And as you see, they indeed respect each other's data and they all fall into one curve. So it looks quite convincing. So how much dark energy is there? This is the space allowed if we consider the dark energy here and the matter density here, and if the total equals 1, before all this data in 98, we would know that the universe could be closed, it could be open, or it could be flat. And then data start coming. So this was the first set, huge amount of parameter space went out. So from WMAP, all of this red area becomes not valid. So we already are here. This is the allowed region, which tells you that dark energy could, there could be quite a decent amount of dark energy, but it was not clear which one. So more data were coming. In particular, this orange area came from Sloan Digital Sky Survey. So it cuts another piece in the parameter space. So we are already here. Then more data came. And finally, the less reliable data are from supernova. But you see, after all, here this white region, which supernova told us in 98 from the very beginning, this was their statement. There are approximately 0.7 in dark energy and approximately 0.3 in matter. And now what we know, that whatever our mistrust to supernova data, still, in addition to supernova, because we have this WMAP and Sloan Digital Sky Survey, etc., etc., it is extremely difficult to say today that you can do something and so the dark energy will go away. It is certainly sitting close to 0.7 and the energy of matter is certainly sitting around 0.3. And because it was accumulation of data, you don't expect this to go away. And so this is what theoretical physicists have to know at present. So we conclude from all the things which I was showing you that dark energy of the order 0.7 of the total energy of the universe is there, and it is impossible now to believe that it is just a mistake with all the data which I was showing to you. So 70% of total energy of the universe is dark, and theoretical physics has almost nothing to say about it. Now, here is another statement. There is a very important parameter which is called equation of state, W. And as a function of redshift, this is and one of the last year statement that it is very close to minus 1. See, cosmological constant would give you exactly minus 1. It would be just straight line. So the data have error bars. But this is one of the best things which they tell us at present. So here is the statement as of 94. We find that the simplest solution, W equals minus 1, fits the data at all redshifts. So with regard to the error bars, W equals minus 1 fits very well. However, it is, if you look at the data, you see it is not impossible that actually it is not minus 1. It could be a function of redshift. And then it is not a cosmological constant. And then we will have hard time to explain not only the size of cosmological constant, but also why it changes along the redshift. So the most recent thing which I have heard about it, at Stanford we have now a new Institute of Particle Astrophysics, and so people from the high energy theory group could accidentally pop to the and listen to the seminar of people who do measurements, and this was work by these three people. This is what they are telling us. So they have analyzed, in addition to all previous data, also they constrained dark energy with X-ray galaxy clusters. And here is the punchline. We find no significant evidence for evolution in the dark energy equation of state parameter with redshift. Marginal hints of evolution in the supernova data become less significant when the cluster constraints are also included in the analysis. Which is good, because it is difficult enough to explain cosmological constant, but to explain also that instead of cosmological constant we have this strange time-dependent dark energy is much more difficult. So as of now, those data look good, and here is their picture which they allowed me to show, also it's not yet published. See, when they added clusters, this is the allowed region, so it's really very close to minus one. And so will be happening, we will be all watching what they measure and try to understand the significance of these measurements. Okay, so about new data. We should expect some new data from Boomerang and many other, which Dick Bond will probably tell us in June. You may expect to ask him. And as of now, he says that the data do not tell us that the cosmological concordance model is wrong. They seem to support it. We will have, of course, many of those new data coming during the next 10 years from Planck and SNAP and Large-Scale Structure Telescope, etc. So as of now, we can say for the person who works in high-energy theoretical physics, the summary is that it is likely that 70% of dark energy and early universe inflation will be confirmed, but we have to wait. Still, let me summarize all these pictures which I was showing you, and you may not be interested in details of every single experiment, but here is something like what is good to know if you find your way in theoretical physics, what you would like to explain. So the cosmological concordance model includes early universe inflation, which is something like near the Sitter space. And it was happening 13.7 billion years ago. And it was going during 10 to the minus 35 seconds. And during this time, the Hubble parameter, which is the velocity divided by the scale factor of the universe, was approximately constant. And the value of the potential at that time was proportional to this h squared m Planck squared. And because we know the anisotropy of the cosmic microwave background, this is of the order 10 to the minus 5 of M Planck. The current acceleration, which started 5 to 7 billion years ago, is again a near de Sitter space. It is happening now, and during a few billion years, it has exactly the same structure of A dot to A Hubble parameter being approximately constant. However, the potential at that time, h squared m Planck squared, is a completely outrageous number here. You see this 10 to the minus 60 m Planck. Extremely, extremely difficult to understand from any normal consideration. The common feature of both is the fact that it is an accelerating universe, which is by definition inflation. So string theory and cosmology. All observations so far seem to fit four-dimensional Einstein gravity. However, the fundamental physics is assumed to be 10-dimensional string theory or 11-dimensional M theory and supergravity. So the question is how to get de Sitter or near de Sitter four-dimensional space from those 10 and 11. And if we want to be much more ambitious, how do we get 10 to the minus 5 for early universe inflation, where those numbers will come? And where do we get this 10 to the minus 16? This is the dramatic problem, and we don't have a solution, but we try to do something. And by the way, string community for the last period was mostly busy with ADS-CFT correspondence. The problem with this, this is a situation where cosmological constant is negative, and therefore it is not clear how to apply any of this to what we observe. And this is for young string theorists something to think about. So why it was so difficult to get this de Sitter space from 10 or 11? Because there are no-go theorems. No-go theorems have exceptional values. You can't simply do something and no-go theorem will not go away, because if good people establish those theorems, you have to change the conditions. So the theorems were telling you can't get four-dimensional de Sitter space starting with 10 or 11-dimensional theory. On the other hand, we have these observations. So I'll try to tell you what happened during the next couple of years. So how to perform a compactification from 10 or 11 dimensions to 4 dimensions and stabilize the modulus. So you have to imagine this 10-dimensional space, and therefore there is a 6-dimensional space which is compact and has a volume, and this volume has to be equal to something, so that you have an effective four-dimensional theory. So this is the well-known space of string theory. There are many versions of it which are expected to be all physically equivalent. And it was known for 20 years that string theory is not easily compatible with cosmology. But during the last few years, this became a very serious issue because of all these new observations. So the recent proposal, which I'll explain shortly, towards cosmology, in particular in type 2B string theory, simply because it was easier to work in some particular version of this model. And this is the construction which I already discussed. And in the framework of this construction, it is possible to address the issue. See, the reason I'm showing you this photographic image of quantum fluctuation blown up to the size of the universe, because cosmological observation now is different from 10 or 20 years ago when we knew that string theory has problem. Now they're much more precise, and therefore this is what happens here. So inflationary slow roll parameters and something which is known as primordial slope, roughly speaking, they tell us something about the tilt of the spectra and other properties of the potential. On the other hand, in string theory, there are all kinds of runaway moduli. And the simplest case we would consider, assume we have just one scalar field and some exponential potential. So for early universe inflation, if we want to be in agreement with the data, this parameter lambda has to be of the order of 1 over 10. And for dark energy, it could still be of the order 1. Now, the major moduli in string theory include dilaton and this total volume of the 6-dimensional compactified space. And I'll explain it more in the third lecture. So for the dilaton, the parameter is square root of 2. For the total volume is square root of 6. So you are absolutely unable to explain neither inflation nor even current dark energy. And so the only solution is to fix those moduli and find something else which will control the cosmological evolution. So, conclusion which we reached before we started working on this new construction, that both stringy moduli have very steep potential, and they're incompatible with the data, even for current acceleration of the universe, particularly the total volume. So, the new buzzword in string theory, flux compactification, in particular in type 2B string, is using lots of existing structures. And it is known how to stabilize, for example, axion dilaton and complex structure moduli. We have these Calabi-Yau spaces or some other spaces on which we compactify the theory. And so some set of moduli can be fixed by fluxes. Fluxes are something like electric or magnetic fields, which you know in four-dimensional theory, but they are in 10 dimensions. And so they're well known, they have been analyzed recently, and some of the moduli have been fixed. However, Keller moduli stabilization, and those are in particular the volume of this six-dimensional space, they are not fixed. They are so-called runaway moduli. So when they run away, string theory simply wants to have this volume infinite, and then it goes back to 10 dimension where string theory feels at home naturally. It resists being four-dimensional. So one of the examples was to introduce some particular three forms, and these fluxes, they were fixing the shape of those moduli and the dilaton axion. So one of the more or less developed model has the following structure. This is the Calabi-Yau space, and those are those new numbers, k's and m's. They're integer fluxes associated with electric and magnetic forms. And due to those fluxes, there is a special geometry which has a highly warped region. So we have these throats here, and this redshift in the metric exists because of this dependence on these numbers k and m, which are fluxes. So there were new constructions specifically designed to address the issue of cosmology here. Oh, this is a six-dimensional space, which means that this is DS4, this is our space. Depending on where we are here, we feel this redshift. So our scales in our four-dimensional space, we are not here, this is a six-dimensional space. So if we are here, we have one scale. If we are here, our scales are different. So when we move in the higher dimensional space, our metric has this dependence on the position in the higher dimensional space. So I'll skip this. What I'd like to say that there are two different methods of realization of this fixing of moduli, which were not known before, or partially known before. So the first thing you can do is to use a method that there are some brains in this higher dimensional space, and you can wrap them around some cycles, and this will stabilize the volumes. And therefore, you'll get these particular factors proportional to those volumes. The second case is to use non-perturbative things which come from something like Gugino condensation. This was known 20 years ago. This was not known. This goes back to 96, but now we know that in this cosmological setting, we need both of them, in addition to fluxes. So what was known in 20 years ago, that there is a modular problem. Everybody knew it. Now, however, we have a combination of new tools which allow us to fix the moduli. So there is an effective theory as the result, which has the I'll just flash few features of this model. So in the end of the day, the stabilization of moduli takes place in anti-de Sitter critical points, still not in de Sitter. However, it is possible in certain models to do the following. So first, we stabilize all the moduli at some negative cosmological constant. But then it is known how to uplift We call this procedure uplifting this minimum to the sitter space. So what you see here is the final result of this construction. So the volume basically wants to become infinite and give us a 10-dimensional space. However, we can now trap it somewhere at the finite point, and we have positive cosmological constant. So this is nice, and many people are trying to improve and add and change things, and this is all in the process, but at least this construction gives us something which is now called metastable de Sitter minimum. So there are a number of ideas based on this construction. One goes by the name of landscape. Lenny Susskind invented it, and Douglas and many others introduced the statistics of flux vacua. These seem to be a very fruitful ideas. There were, on the basis of this construction, there were numbers of models of inflation in string theory developed, and something quite curious, cosmic strings produced by the end of inflation may be observable in the nature in the future, according to Copland, Myers, and Polchinski. It is useful to say that a long time ago, everybody was hoping that cosmic string will actually explain everything. However, if you have only strings, this is the green line, which was a prediction. So what happens later, when the measurements have been performed, you see they have nothing to do with the prediction from cosmic strings. However, still it is possible that some small amount of those strings is available, and it is not impossible that LIGO or LISA eventually will see the appearance of these strings, and perhaps, as some string theorists hope, there will be a chance to see a difference between field theory strings or string theory strings. But this remains to be seen. So a general problem of dark energy, which I want to emphasize here, is the following. So the potential has to be of the order 10 to the minus 120. And this is extremely difficult. Now, if instead of cosmological constant, we expect some potential which depends on some evolving scalar, this would mean that the first derivative of the potential is also has to be of the order 10 to the minus 120. And this would be extremely, extremely difficult to explain. So the only model which I also want to mention here, which comes from consistent reduction from M string theory, which is called ghost-free de Sitter supergravity. It has the following feature. Instead of compactifying 10 dimension on something like a sphere, which has a finite volume, a compactification proceeds on some hyperbolic spaces. And there are lots of these de Sitter extremum points, but they turn out to be always a saddle point, so either maximum or saddle point. And what was interesting here, so we worked on these models a few years ago, and we studied them, and I'll show you now why they always lead to collapsing universe. Since then, there were new models. In particular, this recent model by Achuraya, Denef, and Valandro, which I believe was presented on one of the previous workshops here in Toronto, has precisely the same feature. They have found a huge amount of new de Sitter extremum, but they always are saddle points, which means that there is at least one direction in which you can fall down and collapse. So those are toy models of dark energy with future collapse. And they, in fact, have anthropic explanation of the scale of cosmological constant. So this is the picture for this class of model. So the universe expands, then it accelerates, and then there are models where the universe continue expanding forever, or sometimes it may collapse. So each time when we have this one of these de Sitter spaces, which are saddle points, they tend to collapse. And for these models, there are also a prediction of this W function, which is function of the redshift. But because I told you this, I worked on this 2 years ago, and more recent models always have this de Sitter collapsing they become less interesting because the data seem to tell us that W is just minus one, so don't even bother with those kind of models. Still, I thought I'll mention them. One of the reminders for those people in string community who remember all the excitement with ADS CFT, that those are typical ADS extrema. They are maximum and saddle points. And even when they are de sitter, but when they are obtained in this class of models, they still remain like maximum. And so the universe tend to, if it develops in this class of model, it tends to collapse. And this, in principle, will be observable. So choices here are either we'll have just W equals minus 1, plain cosmological constant, or one possibility is that the W will evolve in time, and then perhaps we'll be able to predict in which branch the future universe will develop. And here is the summary of the lifetime. So in KQLT type of a model, where we have a perfect minimum, so there is a de sitter minimum, so everything which will happen with the system, it will eventually tunnel into this region, and the time will be 10^10^120. So it is practically eternal. We'll always stay here safely. In this other class of model, which are also exact solution of M string theory supergravity with fluxes, which are Gauss free de Sitter supergravities, unstable. They are unstable because de Sitter space is a saddle point instead of this one. So it looks typically like that. The potential here is a perfect minimum, but there is a possibility of tunneling, which will take extremely long time. Whereas if any of those models will be, by some reason, preferred, then those are potentials where if you stay here, you can stay for a very long time, but eventually in 10^11 billion years, you will collapse. So let's talk about landscape idea. When this possibility of having any de Sitter space at all in string theory came up, people have realized that the previous stage of having just flux vacuum has enormous amount of those vacuum. So with the count of loop corrections, each vacuum will change. However, the total landscape picture with many vacuum will survive. This is the assumption. And there are many, many vacuum with negative, vanishing, and positive energy. And somewhere there is our vacuum. With cosmological constant, which is of the order 1 over n, where n, the number of vacuum, is required to be at least 10^120. Then you may hope to explain that with that many vacuum, there is one which is 10^-120, which is what we observe. So the number of phenomenologically or anthropically acceptable vacuum is smaller than the number of total vacuum. And this is more or less a picture which some people start actively working on, and some hate it. But the point is, there is no better idea at this moment. And so whoever you ask will have its own opinion, but the fact is the data seems to be there and needs an explanation. So for the landscape, we have this picture with 10^100, 10^1000 different vacuum according to the counting of fluxes. And what we need, actually, in this extremely unfriendly landscape to find some inflationary valley where we can explain the cosmology which we see. So let me give you the summary. So with KKLT and other versions of de Sitter minima, we have found that vacuum with positive cosmological constant are possible in string theory. An equation of state with W equals minus 1 is consistent with string theory. This is a new result. 2 years ago, we had nothing to say about it. To explain any other equation of state of dark energy, like W not equals minus 1, W prime not equals 0, remains extremely difficult. And in particular, there is no way to do anything about this famous phantom energy where W equals minus 1, it looks like impossible and most likely not really valid. There are other ideas, but they all don't seem to be consistent with supersymmetry. So let me bring back some information on what we learned about possible two type of string inflation models. One type of models includes brains. So we need to put in this space some objects like brains. The idea goes back to Dvalli and Tai. And the inflaton field corresponds to distance between brains in Calabi-Yau space. And there are few models of this kind which are quite well developed. Another idea, which also goes back 20 years ago, but now it has been worked out in the context of this stabilized moduli. So one of these models which we worked on has the name Ray Strack inflation, and it is an interesting model with specific predictions, and it doesn't require any brains. So this is again a short resume of new models, inflationary models in string theory. This one, which I was trying to explain, has this so-called warped throats. And if we have brains in those throats, and if we do lots of things to improve the original models, it is quite plausible in the context of the landscape that at least one of these models will have the features which will be eventually confirmed by future data. So this is considered a reasonable model. There is another model which I like, which is associated with D-term inflation in field theory, and this is related to D3, D7 brain inflation. And finally, this is a model of race-track inflation, which is also interesting. And there are other models, and people are working on this, because during the next 10 years, there will be more data which will tell us which of these models is actually in our real world. So here I'm giving the short resume on important new results and consequences of this new picture, which I consider most important over the last 1.5 years. So what happened that this group of people, Deneve Douglas, Faria, Grassi, and Caccio, came up with examples of models where, in string theory, where all moduli are stabilized. And this was known for 20 years that there is a problem of modular stabilization. And so they gave such models. I was working with Paul Aspinwall, Berkshoff, Kashanipur, Sorokin, and Tomasiello, and we also came up with interesting new, rather simple models of how to stabilize moduli, and I will talk about these models in my next more technical lectures. Now, something of absolutely general interest came up with regard to scale of Suzy breaking from cosmology. This is what happens. So if we have to fine-tune cosmological constant, we may need to fine-tune the Higgs mass. And so the generic low-scale Suzy may not be valid. And this was the idea which has been used by Arkani, Hamed, and Dimopoulos when they came up with this very smart idea of split supersymmetry. Split supersymmetry has new features. People at CERN, at LHC, know about it extremely well. They are now preparing everything not to miss it, because it is still supersymmetry, but it is not standard model of supersymmetry. And the funny thing about this was the following, that Giudice and Rotazzi, who were particle physicists working at LHC, for many years they were trying to come up with a consistent model of this type, where most particles, supersymmetric particles, are very high energies. And the only thing which you need to be relatively at low energies is the Higgs. But this was against the idea that you want something natural. So they couldn't finish their calculation. So according to the story which I just heard last week from Arkani, Hamed, and Dimopoulos, they were inspired by this idea of a landscape which simply changed the idea and the concept about what is natural, what is not natural. So they starting from this almost philosophical new ground, came up with the precise technical definition of split supersymmetry. So when 2 weeks later Giudice and Rattazzi published their work on this, they have agreed that by missing this natural starting point, they discovered it later. But in the end of the day, we will have to know whether it is supersymmetry at all, whether it is standard model supersymmetry or split supersymmetry. This all will come soon in future measurements. Now, this is a short preview of what I will do in the next lectures, which will be more technical. So the major problem with modulus space, this is one of the examples. See, those modulus space are very tricky. They have holes, and they have all kind of non-trivial topology. And so the reason why it is, and moduli are describing their shape and the volume. So when we are in four dimensions, those scalars which we see, they are actually, they have all kinds of geometric meaning when you look at this type of spaces. So what happens now that those new mechanism of volume stabilization, roughly speaking, we know how to wrap a brain around some cycle so that the cycle holds this, and then this surface becomes rigid. What is interesting here, and I'm giving you a statement about my work with Paul Aspinwall, who is a mathematician at Duke. So we were analyzing M theory compactified on K3 times K3, those are well-known surfaces, with fluxes, and its F theory limit, which is dual to an oriented fault of type 2B string on K3 times T2 over Z2. This is a relatively simple model. So we argue that instanton effects will generically fix all of the moduli, and I would like to add that modular space is no more in this model. And since you know that for many, many years, a modular problem was as severe as possible with regard to cosmology as well as particle physics, it is nice to know that the data are pushing on us, and so we are inventing new ways to fix the modular, and they are working. So the technical part I will explain at other talks. So in summary, on thin cosmology, over the last few years, we were able to construct the first model of cosmological constant dark energy in the context of string theory. Several models of string theory inflation are available now, but much more work is required. And future cosmological and particle physics data will help us to test the new ideas in string theory and cosmology. So here is LHC. We expect to have, this is ATLAS. In 2007, we may know something as soon as that. This is Planck, which is the mostly European-based satellite, which will give new cosmological data. This is SNAP. In fact, many theorists at Stanford are part of SNAP. SNAP is at Berkeley, and it is designed to make to fly and give much more data on supernova. And finally, large-scale structure observatory, which is also Tony Tyson at Davis, a person who is in charge, is building. And it is interesting that, and certainly I don't know many others, perhaps somebody else knows more about the future data, but clearly during the next 10 years, we'll know so much about particle physics and cosmology that it will be extremely interesting to work and explain what we see. Thank you.